Buildings designed by Wisconsin's own Frank Lloyd Wright made it on the UNESCO World Heritage List this week, so it's a really good time to take a tour through his architecture on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Wright's estate, Taliesin, in Spring Green, was like his laboratory. Taliesin is one of the eight buildings that UNESCO deems of outstanding universal value. These buildings are now in the same class as the Taj Mahal and the Great Wall of China. Have you visited a Frank Lloyd Wright design building? Tell us about your experience. What would you recommend others check out? We're at 800-642-1234. Carrie Rademacher is Executive Director of Taliesin Preservation at the Frank Lloyd Wright Visitor Center. Carrie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So it sounds like this designation, World Heritage, making it on the World Heritage List, this is years in the making. I heard like 15 years in the making. How big of a deal is this?
Oh, it's huge. Yes, you're right. It was about 15 years in the making, and it took a lot of effort from a lot of different sites, people that worked so hard in pulling this nomination together and sending it off to UNESCO. And then, of course, when we received word that indeed this nomination had been inscribed, it was just pure joy, pure joy.
I bet you were like trying to pinch yourself. I mean, could you believe it? This is huge.
It was huge. Yeah. And we were actually up at Taliesin that morning and we were watching it live streaming. And so it was just a very surreal moment. And afterwards, you know, after we were all excited and cheering, and I stepped into the living room and the sun was just starting to come up and I just was looking around and I thought, this is just the most amazing thing, I think, for Frank Lloyd Wright, for all of the sites, not only that were inscribed, but also all of the sites that are in the country and around the world, because Frank Lloyd Wright really was quite incredible with what he did with his designs and the way that he made them so relatable to humans. So it truly was a joy.
He was prolific. He was, you know, a visionary. I read that he designed more than 1,000 buildings. So how were you able to bring it down to 8?
It was difficult. It was difficult. And the process really was looking at the ones through the last 50 years of his career that were most significant in the way that they were, they spoke in terms of modern architecture. And that was part of the inscription is Frank Lloyd Wright being deemed as a 20th century modern architect. And so it was difficult. And there were some sites that were a little nervous about being a part of the list because of, you know, the noticeable, you know, visibility.
Oh, the exposure.
The exposure, yeah. But it was difficult, but such an amazing experience.
Well, two of the sites that made the list are here in Wisconsin, Taliesin and the Jacobs House. Can you first tell us about the Jacobs House?
Sure. So the Jacobs House is a really unique home, and it is located here in Madison. It was built in around 1937, and it was unique in the fact that Frank Lloyd Wright wanted to create something that was small, that was for an average American to experience and to live in. And so there was, from the street, it is a private home, but from the street, it's got a very low profile. But once you walk into the home, you just are immediately immersed with nature. There's large windows. There's just beautiful woodwork. It's very comfortable home to be in.
Does it kind of tuck into the landscape around it, which to me is so Frank Lloyd Wright?
That's right. Yes, it does. It does. It fits very well within the property, the landscape of where it's located. And it's a modest home, but it's got such a grand feeling when you enter it.
8 Frank Lloyd Wright buildings are now designated UNESCO World Heritage Sites, and we're on a tour of his architecture through Wisconsin with Carrie Rademacher. She's Executive Director of Taliesin Preservation at the Frank Lloyd Wright Visitor Center. Are you a fan of Wright designs? Tell us why. Do you believe in buildings with the building with the landscape, the organic architecture, and Wright's philosophy? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org. Well, let's go to Taliesin now, which is a place that you live and breathe every day. What is so special about Taliesin?
Oh, boy. What is so special about Taliesin, I think, is the way that an individual can really experience Taliesin, because it's not, you automatically think about the building and the architecture, which obviously is there, but the way that you're surrounded by nature, the land, the arts, community, it really is a truly immersive experience being there.
So Taliesin Preservation started in 1993 and continues working today. Can you tell us about what that is and what you do with it?
Sure. So we were, yes, you're right. We were formed in 1993, and it was actually former Governor Tommy Thompson that stepped in and saw that we need a Wisconsin entity to help preserve Taliesin. And so what we do is we have a mission that is focused on education and preservation. And so we educate and we preserve the natural, the cultural, and the built environments at Taliesin. So we're looking not only at the actual physical structures, but we're looking at the vast 800 acres that surround it, but also the cultural component that was so significant in Wright's time, and that really had so many other hundreds of individuals have passed between those doors and the walls and really created Taliesin.
And it was kind of like his laboratory, his own estate was. What made it that way?
I think it was, along with the Wisconsin idea, Frank Lloyd Wright was very much a proponent of the Wisconsin idea that is celebrated now throughout the state and with the university system. And he believed that Taliesin should be a living laboratory where people come to mind for thought exchange, for creative ideas, as a way to experiment and explore other avenues of living and really being immersive in the nature and the arts and the land. And so that really is what Taliesin is.
And then there's Taliesin West.
Yes.
How does that come into play, and where did that fit in?
So Taliesin West was the winter home that Frank Lloyd Wright created in the 1930s as a way after the School of Architecture was developed in his apprenticeship. And so they would migrate back and forth. So in the summer, they would come up to Taliesin. They would be there. And then in the winter, they would head down to Taliesin West.
And so still doing lots of designing work, regardless of whether it was summer or winter.
Absolutely.
And the apprentices, too, were just working around the clock with him.
They were. And they were doing it really through this learn by doing. So they would come and they would work alongside Frank Lloyd Wright, alongside a lot of the apprentices that had been there for a while. But they also not only learned architecture, but they learned about life. They learned about culture. They learned that in order to be an architect, you also have to be well-versed in entertaining. And so you needed to know how to cook. You needed to know how to entertain at a dinner table. You needed to be well rehearsed in music, in the arts as well.
We're talking Frank Lloyd Wright architecture and places to see it around Wisconsin. Carrie Rademacher is Executive Director of Taliesin Preservation. That's the nonprofit that preserves Taliesin Estate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you visited a Frank Lloyd Wright designed building? Tell us about your experience. What's your favorite? What would you recommend others check out? Call in, email ideas@WPR.org. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network.
Well,
We're touring Frank Lloyd Wright architecture on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This week, 8 of his buildings were designated to join just 16 other World Heritage sites in the U.S. and roughly 1,000 around the world. This is the first time UNESCO has recognized modern American architecture. Are you a fan of Frank Lloyd Wright designs? Tell us why. Do you believe in building with the landscape, the organic architecture? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Carrie Rademacher is our guide, and she heads up Taliesin Preservation. Well, let's go on the Frank Lloyd Wright Trail the tour. You can take a tour on this trail, and it was started in 2017. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
So what is on this trail?
Well, what is on this trail is really, it begins in Richland Center, which was the birthplace of Frank Lloyd Wright. And it begins there. You see the AD German warehouse, and then it'll take you through Taliesin, Wyoming Valley School, that's located just outside of Spring Green. And then you go to Madison. You see, Monona Terrace, of course, and the Unitarian Meeting House. And then also then you're heading to Milwaukee and all the way down to Racine. So it encompasses about 9 different Frank Lloyd Wright structures that are here in the state.
Wow, that was a whirlwind tour. So
Let's back up to
AD German Warehouse. So this is in Richland Center. It's said to have been designed in 1915. What do we know about this warehouse?
Well, it's an interesting building. Yes, and it was actually built in 1921. Frank Lloyd Wright designed it. It kind of has a Mayan revival architectural look to it. It was a warehouse, and they are currently undergoing, the group that is managing it is undergoing a capital campaign to bring it back to its glory and opening it up for tours. So it is available for tours, but I do recommend that people check their website and find out exactly the times and days that it is available.
What would, in back in the day, what would have been going on in this warehouse?
It really was a warehouse that housed a lot of different things, more of the mechanical side of things was really interesting.
So then there is the wing spread at Wind Point. What is wing spread?
Well, wing spread is a beautiful location just outside of Racine. It was built in 1937 for the family of S.C. Johnson. It is kind of a prairie school style. It's grand. It's beautiful. You walk into the main entrance and you see this incredible fireplace that just shoots up to the sky. And it was built for the family of S.C. Johnson.
And that you can tour today?
You can. Again, this is run through the Johnson Foundation. So if you go to their website, you can check out the days and times that it's available for tours.
Well, let's go to Milwaukee now and this and Burnham, which was family home design.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Those were created in the mid-1914s, 1915s as a home for affordable living. And so there's a stretch along Burnham Street that has a variety of different Frank Lloyd Wright built homes that, again, are under restoration. They're doing incredible work bringing them back to their glory. And, again, those are available for tours. I would recommend checking out their website to find days and times that they're available.
Take us to Monona Terrace in Madison. What do we know about Wright's dream civic center?
Yes, yes. So that was a long time coming, just like this UNESCO inscription.
Right. Nice parallel there.
It was designed to be this grand convention center. And as we know now, it was built in the 1990s, a long time in fruition. Tony Putnam, who was an apprentice of Frank Lloyd Wright's, was one of the lead architects in making that happen and building it. As you know, if you're coming from John Nolan Drive here in Madison, you get this incredible view of the skyline of Madison with the Monona Terrace. But then if you're up at the Capitol, you're looking down, you see an incredible view as well. And they absolutely are open for tours. It's a convention center. It's live and bustling there.
We are on a tour of Frank Lloyd Wright architecture through Wisconsin with Carrie Rademacher as our guide. She's Executive Director of Taliesin Preservation at the Frank Lloyd Wright Visitor Center. Still time for your thoughts on Wright Design Buildings at 800-642-1234. What one have you gone by and you're thinking, did he design that or not? You know, do you see influences around where you live? Let's talk about it. Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Let's talk about the first Unitarian Society meeting house in Madison and the space for spirituality.
Yeah, absolutely. So Frank Lloyd Wright was very close with this design, and Marshall Erdman was the friend of Frank Lloyd Wright's that actually was the one that was building this building. But Frank Lloyd Wright, his ancestors emigrated to the Wyoming Valley where Taliesin is located, and they were very much Unitarians. They emigrated from Wales. There's a small chapel just located by Taliesin that they built that was housed further Unitarian worshiping. And so Frank Lloyd Wright, his ancestors were very much Unitarians. They actually they were one of the first to create this Unitarian Society here in Madison. And so it was real personal to Frank Lloyd Wright to build this building. Again, it was built in about 1949 to 1951. It's just an incredible location. And you just for those that have been there, you see this real cathedral type feeling, but yet it's very personable.
How do Frank Lloyd Wright materials stand the test of time? How difficult is upkeep on these buildings, especially Taliesin?
Well, they're quite difficult, of course, because you want to keep the true feeling and the true spirit of these buildings. Taliesin poses a whole other set of challenges because it was very much a living laboratory. So a lot of what they did was on the spur of the moment. They would try things that they would later go out and create for a client. So it definitely is a challenge at Taliesin. We say that, you know, in order to do preservation work, you almost have to do an archaeological dig first before you can actually get to the restoration of it. So time and labor really is quite intense, but so worth it. So worth it.
And because you have so much traffic coming from all over the world, how many tourists enter Taliesin each year?
So we're open for tours 6 months out of the year, May through October, 7 days a week. And we see about 25 to 30,000 visitors every summer. We are expanding our tours to catch more of the shoulder season, so August, November. And this year we're building, extending that out into December as well.
So you were mentioning earlier how incredible it is for UNESCO to deem this a World Heritage Site. Are there any others in the Midwest?
There really is not a whole lot. And I think that that's what is so exciting about this nomination and being inscribed as a World Heritage Site. Wisconsin now has two, Taliesin and the Jacobs One House. Illinois now has two with the Roby House and Unity Temple. But really there's not very many in the Midwest. And so that really helps to elevate our profile, around the world.
Let's take a quick call now. Bill from Madison. Hi, Bill.
Yes. What about the Greek Orthodox Church, the Flying Saucer Church on 92nd Street in Wauwatosa?
Yeah, that is a really unique design. It's incredible. It is available for tours, so you can check out their website. But it is actively a church as well.
What is your favorite Frank Lloyd Wright designed place, or even a place within Taliesin that you find almost magical?
Oh boy. There's so much about Taliesin that is extremely magical. My favorite, I think, at Taliesin would be standing on the crown of the hill. Many people think that or know the expression that Frank Lloyd Wright said is, you don't build on top of a hill, because if you build on top of a hill, you lose the hill. And so Taliesin is really wrapped around the side of the hill, kind of like arms cradling this, the location of where it's at. So that really is a very special place for me. But I love the Herbert and Catherine Jacobs house. That, to me, is just sparks just such an incredible feeling when you're in there as well.
Is it the warmth? What is it? Can you put your finger on it?
I think it's, you're right, it's the warmth, but it's the way that it embraces nature as well in such a cozy environment.
Well, Carrie, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Carrie Rademacher is Executive Director of Taliesin Preservation. That's the nonprofit organization preserving Wright's Taliesin Estate, giving tours to thousands of tourists each year. It is Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show, and coming up, the annual summer tradition, going to the races, the catfish races. We'll learn about that. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network. News update is coming up next. It's a Friday, and you're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about catfish races. Catfish races are a thing, and they have been a thing for decades in Greenville. That's a community near Appleton. It's an annual summer tradition, and we wanted to get to the bottom of this. Have you been? That is the burning question. Or have you won it? Have you been changed by catfish racing? 800-642-1234. Please tell all. Clint Dorn chairs the Greenville Catfish Races and Concert Extravaganza. Clint, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, so catfish races, how does this go down?
Well, it's a pretty big deal. If you have never been out there, we have a very loyal fan base, and we start training those catfish, you know, months in advance, you know, getting their regimen in so they're ready to race on game day. So,
oh, yeah, these are exciting. Physique. They have physique, these catfish, I guess. Yeah.
There's some pictures out there on the internet, but yeah, we have about 8 or 9 glass tanks, and we put the fish in there. There's some catfish handlers. We have some kids from the crowd come out, and they get little flags, and yeah, we race them. It's the real deal. And then if you bet on the fish, of course, and if your fish wins, you get catfish bucks. So it's pretty fun.
All right, so these catfish are going through these glass fish tanks, and they're swimming from one side to the other?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And so then how, who, the catfish that wins, what happens?
So we rotate the fish out. So when your fish wins, they probably do about 4 or 5 races at a time, and then we put them back in a big tank and kind of give them a break. But and the other misconception is that what happens to the fish that lose? The answer is they do not end up in the fryer. They actually just still go back in the tank. But we're real careful with the fish. But yeah, they get rotated out throughout the day. And if the fish wins, whoever bet on that fish gets some prize money, and they can use it on concessions at the park.
So how fast do these catfish swim?
You know, I've never been asked that before. So fairly fast.
You don't clock them?
Yeah. The time trials are usually in February. So,
right.
They zip along. You know, we lift up the barrier and just tap the tank a little bit, and they scoot down to the other end. You know, the kids have a great time doing it, and the parents are you know, cheering everything on. So that's lots of fun.
Do they ever get turned around? Do they ever go the wrong direction they're supposed to go?
Occasionally. And you know, there is the catfish handler, I guess you could call them a jockey, and they just kind of have a little partition behind it. They just kind of help scoot the fish along, so it usually works out pretty well.
So they actually touch the catfish to move them along?
It depends. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're scooting the catfish along.
Yeah.
All right. So do you have people who are really good at this who have maybe won more than a year or so or who come back?
Yeah, I suppose there's different strategies. It is true. Different catfish handlers have had better success than others. So, it just kind of depends. I think if, kind of how you nudge them along, or we have to make sure you don't lift your gate early. Otherwise, you get a head start. We can't have any false starts or anything. So, yeah.
now, this is all for a good cause, though. And so there are sponsors involved as well, I understand?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It works out really well. Everybody can sponsor a fish. You make a donation to the club, and you can name your fish. There's usually lots of different silly names. So there's 300 and some. We have brackets, so it kind of ends up in the grand finale. And there's even trophies at the end of the night that get presented. So it's a lot of fun.
And the money goes back into the community?
Yeah, sure. And it's a whole event. There's lots of other things going on. But we donate back to probably, I think it's like 26 different charities. And I won't list them all, but like the local fire departments and first responders. There's a local domestic abuse shelter. There's 4-H programs, food banks. The Lions Club gives out like 4 different scholarships. And beyond that, we have a lot of different other volunteer groups helping us because the event has gotten so much bigger that our club can't do it all by ourselves. So we have other groups come in, like the Boy Scouts come in and they help clean up on Saturday and Sunday. And then we give them a donation out of our proceeds as well. So it's just a great way. We probably have, a dozen different nonprofits helping us. And it ties the community even closer. I love that part of it.
We're talking catfish racing, an annual festival tradition in Greenville. Greenville is west of Appleton. Clint Dorn chairs the Greenville Catfish Races and Concert Extravaganza, and he joins us from our studios in Green Bay. Don't be shy, Catfish Extravaganza fans. We're at 800-642-1234. Are you excited for this year's festivities? Are you sponsoring a fish in the race? What does this mean for your community? Have you attended these races, and what do you think? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. So, Clint, this is a community tradition that's gone on for decades. Why do you think it's stuck so well for Greenville?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think anybody would have thought that when we started this 31 years ago that it would have evolved into this. In some sense, I think it just happens to be that it's catfish races, but I think how we have developed it and how we engage the community, I mean, I can't stress that enough. And then, of course, this is all for charity. It all goes right back. I mean, I think the people that come down there, I would almost guarantee they probably know at least one of the volunteers on the grounds. Like, it's just such a community event, and it's just like a big block party. Everybody knows everybody, and we get such great support from the local community, not just Greenville, but the surrounding communities. And we're all there for the same reason, to make our communities stronger.
Do you know how the catfish got looped into this? Did it always have the catfish thing going on in this festival?
Yeah. Well, the legend goes that I think it was, 30 some years ago, there was a Lions Club down in Greenville, Mississippi, and they invited 20 some other clubs from across the country to come down and see what they did with their fundraiser, which was racing catfish. So this is before my time in the club, but some of the guys went down there and checked it out.
So some of the people in Greenville, Wisconsin, went way down into the Mississippi Delta to see what they were doing.
They went down to the bayou. Yep.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And they checked it out and they brought it back and kind of put our own spin on things. And it's much more than the catfish races. Of course, that is our marquee event. But it really has just gotten a little bit bigger every year.
So how do you get involved with volunteering? Sounds like volunteers are a really big part of this.
We couldn't do it without them. I mean, there's no way our club could handle it alone. So people can either email or contact the club. I mean, we're pretty well set for this year since today is the catfish races. But and we often work with the same groups. But And they, it's like we have the fire departments and first responders, and I said mentioned the Boy Scouts and a number of other groups. But and we kind of work with the same crews, and they know what to do. And then yeah, at the end of the event, you know, we give them a nice donation back to their organization so they can, you know, do further good in the community.
And we would be amiss not to say that there is a huge live music component to this live entertainment. What goes on with the music?
Yeah, we talk about how the event has evolved. It was in the old days just a 1 day event, but now it is spawned into 2 days because we can't pack all that action.
Did you
into
just
one
say
day.
Spawned?
Yeah, yeah.
And just checking.
I wanted to see if you were going to catch that or not, but. Yeah, so we, you know, and again, we started off with like a polka band and a clown, you know, back 30 years ago. And up until more recently, we had two Rock and Roll Hall of Fame acts. It was Leonard Skinner and Joan Jett. Now we are up to three national acts for this year. So we've got Three Doors Down. This is tomorrow night. Collective Soul and Loverboy. And as we sit here, out of 10,000 tickets, there's maybe about 400 left in circulation. So it's just about sold out for this year.
Wow. So how do you get these acts to come in? Is it the catfish?
I'll say yes. Yeah. It's the catfish dinner. It's the secret recipe that we put in the catfish dinners. It's his own little entity. But yeah, we have a national promoter that we work with. And again, that talent lineup has really evolved from local cover bands up until what it is today. So it's just been kind of a gradual process.
There's also a catfish fry. What kind of meal are you serving up?
Yeah, that is our partners in crime, the Greenville Lioness, and they run all things in the kitchen, and they sell out of the catfish almost every year. I think last year they were sold out by about 7:30 at night. But yeah, you can get it just about every which way, but fried and baked and whatever else. But it's really good. Yeah, they have kind of a secret recipe they've been tweaking over the years, and people come back every year for it. That's on Friday night.
And so the catfish fry is Friday night, but the festivities go well into Saturday as well.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Yeah. And the races, though, start at 5 tonight. Is that right?
Yep. From about 5 to about 7:30 or so tonight.
All right. And so
gotta be there.
These races are basically one after another until you have one ultimate catfish that just really won the night. Is that how it works?
King catfish, that is correct, yeah.
Where do these catfish come from?
We typically get them out of state, and there's a whole bunch of reasons why that works out that way, but I think it's down from Missouri. We have a gentleman, that's a process in itself as well. He brings them up, and he has this huge aquarium on a trailer, and he has aerators in there. One year, the aerator failed, and we had a situation, but I think he was able to save all the fish. But yeah, every year he brings them up here, and there's legal reasons and logistics why we have to get them from out of state. And then at the end, they all go back down to the big mud pond in Missouri, and they're all safe and happy till next year.
And then they do it again next year. It is summer, so that means it's time for catfish racing in Greenville. We're talking about it with Clint Dorn. He chairs the Greenville Catfish Races and Concert Extravaganza. He joins us from our studios in Green Bay. Are you sponsoring a fish in the race? What does this mean for your community? Have you attended these races, and what do you think about them? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute for more here on the Ideas Network. We are getting the straight story on catfish racing on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The catfish swim through this glass chute, and you encourage your catfish to swim from one end to the other. How you encourage a catfish, I'm still not entirely clear. So catfish races is what we're We've got going on tonight at 5 o'clock in Greenville, starting at 5, running till about 7:30. And this is a decades-long tradition in the Fox Valley. Are you headed to this event tonight? What are your thoughts on catfish racing? Do you have any techniques you might like to share? We're at 800-642-1234, and Clint Dorn chairs the Greenville Catfish Races and Concert Extravaganza. Clint, what is the impact of this festival to the economic opportunity for your community beyond the support for local charities? What impact does this make?
Well, we get a lot of people from out of town on Friday, but also more so for those concerts. I mean, yeah, the hotels book up, the restaurants in town, they have told us that's their busiest night of the year, for sure. But I guess as another step, you know, with some of the money, we talk about, you know, the long-term impact. Where this event is held, it's called the Lions Park, and it's a 58-acre park, and we've been developing that with a portion of the proceeds for 20-some years. And it impacts the community huge. I mean, last night we were down there getting ready, and there's kids out there playing soccer and practicing baseball, and it's kind of the crown jewel of the town. It's a huge park, and there's always events going on down there. There's weddings, there's corporate company picnics, so it's really developed just the way we wanted it to. It's the center point of the town.
What do you love about Greenville?
Oh, the sense of community. You know, I grew up near there, and like I said, when you go down there, I mean, everybody that comes down there knows somebody that's volunteering. It might even be a family member. And it's I think it's so important. You know, all these towns in Wisconsin in the summer, they all kind of come alive, and they all have their own little festival, you know, whether it's in Greenville or if it's Chicken Fest in Darboy or Cheese Fest in Little Chute. And it just brings the community together. And I think that's so important in this day and age, you know, maintaining that family structure and building that sense of community. It makes your communities a lot stronger.
And if people are interested in this festival, in this experience, where can they go to get more information?
Yep, the best website would be greenvillelions.org, and there's all things catfish and all things concert related on there.
And as we start to wrap up here, how do you make this festival, you know, how do you build on it? How do you make it better than the previous year? Do you feel that kind of that stress to make it better, to improve it?
Well, yeah, actually, we do feel that way. I think you never want it to get stale, if that's one way to put it. So, especially on Friday, we are constantly either bringing in new things for the kids to do, or at least rotating them out. So, and there's all kinds of things going on. We have you know, a rock climbing wall and laser tag. There's a magician tonight. There's a balloon artist. And some of those things are new. We have storybook princesses. They'll be giving out tiaras for little girls tonight. So we try to bring in new activities for the children, rotate those out. And yeah, on Saturday, the bands, yeah, that's a whole nother animal. So,
so I have to ask you really quickly here. Are you sponsoring a fish?
I am.
What's its name?
Well, I have two different ones, but the one is Backbreaker because of my profession, because I'm a chiropractor, so I thought that'd be kind of cheesy.
That works.
Yep. And the other one, I made a prediction because we had to name the fish a while ago, and I put my other fish's name is Sellout, because I anticipated we would sell out the concert this year. And
thank
that
you.
Is proving to be true. Yep.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Clint Dorn chairs the Greenville Catfish Races and Concert Extravaganza. Starts today. Catfish Races getting underway at 5, and he joined us from our studios in Green Bay. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a run that's about to take place across the Upper Midwest.
The Anishinaabe Solidarity Relay began in 1989. It was a response to racism and hatred directed towards Ojibwe people at boat landings and elsewhere after hunting and fishing treaty rights were affirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court. Today, the Healing Circle Run continues to connect Ojibwe communities across Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. For participants and observers, it provides healing and relief through running, walking, and prayer. Finn Ryan brings us the story from Gary Kimisick, Jason Schlender, and Agnes Fleming.
It started back when the spearing was just starting. And there was a lot of anger, a lot of animosity, a lot of hatred, violence directed to the spearers. I was a teacher at Lakeland High School, and that spilled over into the school. There'd be running battles in school breaking out constantly. One of the guys that was working at the school at the time was Ernie St. Germain. I ended up telling Ernie, I wish we could do something, but I don't know how to teach and run. We thought about it. I came back and said, I got an idea, Ernie. Let's run around the outline as close as we can get to it on the roads, trails, whatever, of the Lac du Flambeau Reservation. Ernie says, I got a better idea. Let's connect all the Ojibwe reservations. I said, man, that's fantastic. We had a spiritual advisor. His name was Ngani Gabo, Eugene Begay. He gave us our original instructions, and that was that every step we took was a prayer, and so we had to conduct ourselves in a prayerful way. Back then, we ran right through all the towns. We would just run right down Main Street, block both lanes off and go right through, and of course, people honking horns, people coming out, seeing what's going on. And here's all these Indians carrying flags and eagle feathers and running. People in the bars were not real friendly. And they'd give us the finger and yell at us, but we never responded. Ngani Gabo always told us, you are affecting these people in a positive way. They don't know it yet. So remember that.
My reason for doing this is I don't know anything else. This has been a part of my family tradition for the past 18 years. It's about promoting collective prayer for our people. In all of our communities that this run walk goes through, we all suffer from the same thing. There's a current epidemic of methamphetamines and heroin and opiates, but we've been battling alcoholism for a long time. Even our historical trauma that we deal with, we still are working to overcome those things. Once we go through all those different communities and we've had an opportunity to pray together and to share our stories together, to cry together, to laugh together, to share food, we thank the Spirit. We thank all of our helpers for taking care of us, for allowing us the opportunity to do what we can to help our relatives in different communities.
Even though it may be hot out there, you may get tired. That's a sacrifice we're making for sending up those prayers to the Creator to help heal our people. That's what this spiritual healing run's all about, is to bring healing among all of our reservations.
The staff I had with me today was Sacagawea staff, my husband's staff. After Sacagawea passed on, he gave it to the Healing Circle Run Walk in honor of Jim. And that's why it's so important for me to walk with it at least once a year, to be with him, to talk with him and say, look at what's continuing. Look at what you started, and no one's forgetting. It's continuing on.
This story was originally produced as a video by Finn Ryan and Dylan Jennings for the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lola Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. What's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? It may not be catfish races, but send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings@WPR.org. That is mornings@WPR.org. And we'll explore your tip for a future Wisconsin Weekend program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.